Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Log Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is your host, Barbara Wesley Gray, speaking to you live from Brooklyn, New York, April 2nd, 2017. I'm so happy to have you joining us again this afternoon. Indeed, the weather is nice over in our neck of the woods, and I hope the same thing applies to your area. We have with us right now an esteemed guest, brother named Darnell Blackman, who is the son of the invited host, Mr. Mel Blackman. He'll be here shortly with us, but I'm so happy to have him with us, and as well as my lovely wife, Dr. Dora Gray, is with us in the studio. Again, this is Barbara Wesley Gray, and before we start, we will do as always to give homage to the Most High, give homage to the ancestors, to the Orishas, to the deities, to the guardians, to the angels, to those ancestors in our immediate family and throughout the African diaspora, throughout the world, for their blessings upon us so that we can indeed do this, what we're doing this afternoon. Indeed, without them, we will not have a way. We will not have shoulders to stand on. We will not have direction. So we pay homage, and we're grateful for that energy, for that guidance, for that protection. Ashe. So I'd like to start off by welcoming our guest, Brother Darnell. Thank you for... we want to do libation? Yes, indeed. So let's do libation. We don't want to end the respect to our Most High and the ancestors without doing libation. I will start off by saying Omi Tutu, Ona Tutu, Ede Tutu, Aloha Di Majuba.
Ibashe.
Ile Wu Majuba.
Ibashe.
Ariu Majuba.
Ibashe.
Ale Majuba.
Ibashe.
Akoda Majuba.
Ibashe.
Aseda Majuba.
Ibashe.
Ile Majuba.
Ibashe.
Asura Dara Majuba.
Ibashe.
Iwana Kui Wa Majuba.
Ibashe.
Ajuba O, Ajuba O.
Ibashe. Ashe.
The translation of that in English is, Who wrote who wore the Ku house? It is the owner of the day we respect.
We give praise.
It is the owner, is the spirit of the east respect.
We give
it
praise.
Is the spirit of the west respect.
We give praise.
It is the spirit of the north respect.
We give praise.
It is the spirit of the south respect.
We give praise.
It is the divine Akota respect.
We give praise.
It is the divine Aseda respect.
We give praise.
It is the spirit of the earth respect.
We give praise.
It is the spirit of the divine messenger of transformation respect.
We give praise.
It is the spirit of those who live in the realm of the ancestors we respect.
We give praise.
We give respect. We give respect.
Ashe.
Thank you. Yes, so now we can begin. And we have an invited guest with us, Brother Mabusha, a.k.a. Push. Let me just click him on. Brother Mabusha, are you with us?
Yeah, peace, brother.
Yeah.
Sting Queen.
How you doing? Thank you, man. It's so good to hear your voice.
Yeah, I needed that vibration, you know, like the vibration what we discussed. So I'm here and it's reverberating. you know. So I just want to give thanks.
Oh, man, I'm so happy to hear that. Yes, 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 indeed. We're going to make this a practice. It is a practice in every show. And I suggest that whenever we get together, those of us who are able to do it, when family and friends and associates get together, that we pay homage to the ancestors.
Yes,
so
yes.
I'm so happy that you appreciate that. You know, we have with us Brother Darnell Blackman.
All right.
How you doing, my Bush? It's been a long time. You probably remember I was a little guy when you was on Cambridge Place. I was on Downing Street.
I remember you.
I'm Downing Street, yeah. How you doing? It's been a long
time. I'm good.
Time.
How are you?
I'm okay. How the family?
Everybody's good. Everybody's blessed. For real.
That's
you know?
Blessed. That's so. Blessed. I think I seen you a couple of months back. You made your way up here, but it was so brief. I was riding past. I think I had seen you. You must have stopped through for a minute.
Yeah. You know, I'm always, moving through.
It changed so much.
I was there for Mama Amanisha's transition, too. I stopped through, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I'm here. I'm definitely always there.
Wonderful. You're out in Philly right now, right?
PA, York, Pennsylvania. Yeah, we're I guess about an hour and a half from Philly.
Okay. Well, I just want the listening audience to just know that indeed the reason why. I have you on the show, as well as Brother Darnell Mabusha, and then his father will be with us in momentarily, is that we're discussing the life of Christopher Wallace, a.k.a.
Yes,
Biggie Small, and
right.
The fact that indeed the two of you grew up with him, and I thought it would be apropos to have... the two of you and others who are listening, if they'd like to call in, they can call in at 713-955-0716. Again, that's 713-955-0716. I thought that it really behooves us, you know, to give the respect and the bountiful acknowledgement of the contribution that Biggie has made to our community.
Yes.
So, and I would hope that this would not be the first time that we'll do this.
Yeah.
You know, we cannot say enough to really educate our community and other communities about the significance of any type of art form that comes from us as people of African descent, indeed from us as Africans. And we understand that there are powers that be that try to usurp that particular and put a curve, put a spin on it, as it were,
exactly.
that it is something negative to be amplified as opposed to the positive energy being amplified. So I just, you know, without any further digression, about that thought, I just wanted to put that out there to the listening audience. And again, I thank both of you for being taking your time out this Sunday afternoon.
Thank you.
You know, to share this, the wisdom that you have.
Thank you, Mr.
My pleasure. You're welcome.
All right,
and to share the experience. I'm sure the surreal experience you had with being part of Biggie Small's life. And the others who were word poet technicians, as it were, and were able to really just share the story, you know, to bring people into that world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So is there anything you'd like to contribute? Well, let's start off like this. What do you do, Donna? What is your life involved right now?
Oh, right now I'm a truck driver.
You're a truck driver?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
All right. Produce?
Yeah, produce, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
State to state?
No, just from Manhattan to Jersey. It's a,
okay.
It's a French restaurant. They I just distribute products from one store to another store.
Wonderful.
That's
what's up. Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Wonderful. So you involve yourself in restaurants and
I was at a French restaurant. I was learning a few things with them, as far as with pastries and ingredients and stuff like that. It's not my field of things. So they promoted me to the truck driver and
wonderful.
Get more space and more money. So
absolutely,
come on with that one.
Absolutely. And you have a family?
I got two daughters and one son.
Wonderful,
man.
Wonderful.
That's beautiful.
Wonderful.
So, Mabuse,
congratulations.
Would you like to share? Yeah, thanks, boys. Thanks, man. It's been a long time, boys, for real. Like, I've been telling Mr. Gray, like, you always set that platform in a positive way for us back then, you know, when you always been conscious of my neighborhood and things like that. You know, when God wasn't paying attention to what you were doing, it's definitely, like right now, we need that. We need that. You know, I wish we would have caught on to that a little earlier in the years. You know, a lot of people would have followed up. We'd have been more, you know, more stronger as a people. You know what I'm saying? But you, like I'll tell Mr. Gray, you always been pro-black for the people and for the community. And I want to say thank you for that, too. You know, because
okay.
I acknowledge that.
Brother.
You know?
Thank you.
Yes, yes, yes. We have to do that with no hesitation, man, to acknowledge each other.
Yeah.
In terms of how we uplift each other.
Yeah, he definitely.
You know.
He definitely deserved that.
Paved the way. Yeah. I know. I met you through your mother, Push.
Right.
Sandy.
Right.
Was it your uncle? Either she or your uncle. I think it was your mother.
Yeah.
And you were a toddler back then.
Yeah.
And throughout the years, man, I've seen you grow to such a man of distinction and awareness and commitment to the community.
Exactly.
So to hear Darnell say what he just said to you, it just, you know, reinforces the respect and the admiration that I've had, you know, to see you grow and your journey, you know, as a warrior. And I can see that both of you are warriors of
He definitely did that. What was the name of the movement you had? House of Power?
We're still doing our thing. Preem is up there. He's come down. You know, he comes down here from time to time. We do events the same way we were doing it in Brooklyn, where, you know, we do it out here as well. And fortunately, a lot of my Brooklyn brothers and sisters come down to support. And we, you know, and some talk that, you know, we have relaunched some stuff in the community on that end because it's needed. So I'm definitely going to reach out to you, Brother Darnell, after this.
Yeah, definitely do it. Cause I still stay in contact with Preem once in a while, and he calls.
Okay.
I got his number. We on Instagram and stuff like that. So
we definitely
still connected. You connected.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, definitely. I see you still moving. Cause I remember you you used to throw the parties at the temple on St. James. I was telling Mr. Gray.
Right.
And you know,
right.
you do so. Things like that. Like you got kept. You know, you kind of was one of the people that motivated Big to do what he's doing because you had that open mic, and a lot of people
come over
there and freestyle and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? It was like, basically, you and Preem was like the motivation for what he's doing.
Yeah, that's right.
Kept him going on it. A lot of people want
to
give credit when they do, but it. You was there, like I said, with most of them.
Well, you got the history because not too many people know about that. The 197 St. James, the temple.
Right across the street.
That's right. Right across the street from his house, him and Chico house. So yeah, you know, you was definitely there. You know, you're original. You know, you're one of the original folks that like experienced that. And one of the things, you know, with Biggs, I mean. The synergy, you know, not the synergy that was there. You know, Biggs, doing his thing on the mic. Like one of the things I always say, listen, man, that cat could rhyme, and his wordplay was such at a high standards then. He could rhyme without cursing back in the days. And a lot of people are, like, really unaware of that until you pull out some of those. You know, we fortunately, we recorded some of that stuff, and when we play it, and they don't hear cursing or you know, Chris, you know, rocking the mic without the cursing and stuff, they're like totally amazed. But, you know, it was just phenomenal in terms of him blowing up the way he did, and he put, you know, he put our neighborhood, not just Brooklyn, but our neighborhood more specific on the map. So I definitely, you know, I think, you know, we always got to pay homage to that. But the synergy, though, I mean, come on, you had Gangstar there, you had Guru used to be there, and he would go on to do his thing. He lived in the Marcellus house. I mean, it was a lot of synergy. DJ Law, who used to spin when we were doing those open mics right down in the basement, cool DJ Law used to spin for Biggs while he was doing his open mic. Law would eventually leave Brooklyn, go to Virginia as well, blow up Virginia, and establish the Buddha Brothers out there. So I'm saying, like, that whole that era where Biggie comes from, and again, I'm saying synergy because also, Brother Wesley, you was a part of that because you was some of the folks that helped guide us and gave us the opportunity to do some of those them jams. Because I don't know if you remember or not. Remember, we took it to the townhouse.
Yeah, I remember.
You remember that?
Wow.
That's right. Well, it was, you know, so Big, Rayshawn, all of them pre-Junior Mafia, they were all there, you know? So you was one of the people that gave us the platform to do some of the things that we were doing in the community.
Well, I'm humbled to hear that, and you know, it's just my honor to be able to be a facilitator. Because I know back then the movement was so intense. I mean, you were wearing our dashikis and our afros and just really raising the fist. I'm back and black and proud. And it was just such a surreal experience of unity and love. Most of us love, most of all love amongst us, both elders and young adults and children. And one of the things that I'm doing right now, I have this podcast to rejuvenate that energy, to bring it back to the surface. You know, it had to go through a winter season, as it were. But now we're in the springtime, and we're about to re-blossom.
That's right.
So this show here is the beginning of that re-blossoming.
That's right.
In terms of us uniting and joining forces, because, you know, divided, it's all been about divide and conquer. We know that.
Exactly.
You know, we can intellectualize that. You know, but now we have to have that reverberate within our spirit, understand that that's been the predicament that we've been in. But now that those of you who are about to become junior elders, right?
That's right.
Now have the wherewithal to turn things around, right?
Yes.
Because
we're at the
pinnacle of this nonsense being able to sustain itself. And I always say that we have blessings in disguise at times. I mean, we're going through a political quagmire where the swamp is supposed to be empty, as it were. But right now, we're in a position to empty our swamp. You know, we're in a position to take the water out and make the swamp area fertile through this opposition that we're dealing with right now. Because with every challenge that we have, really, I'm not an original thinker of this particular quote, but for every challenge that comes our way, that's really an opportunity for us to grow.
Yes, yes.
So we now are in a state of growing, and I would dare say that this show is going to be one of the the catalyst of that growth.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's no accident. You know, there's, you know, everything's in divine order. Nothing happens
by
accident.
That's right. That's right.
So we're in the same matrix. We're in the same latitude coordinates. Maybe a distance of about 30 blocks, 40 blocks away from where the brother that we're paying homage to today, Brother Christopher Wallace, a.k.a. Biggie Smalls, lived. And then I have standing with me Mr. Mel Blackman and his companion. And I'd just like to take a pause to just introduce them to the show. Brother Mel, so happy to have you with us. Would you like to say a few words and then introduce us to your guests?
Oh, yeah. No, thanks for having me back. Is that you, Push?
Yeah. How you doing?
Hey, Push. I'm good, man.
How are you?
You all right?
I'm good. How's the rest of family?
Everybody's doing good. My name is Mel Blackman. Brother Wesley said, accompanied by a good friend of mine, Sonya Johnson, who was kind enough to come here because I was running a little late coming back from a church service, and she was kind enough to come along with me instead of me dropping her off first, which was real cool, But it's good to hear your voice. So.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, Babusha, I'd like to introduce you to my wife also, who without her, the show wouldn't be happening.
Okay.
I say that in humility, but and my wife, Dora Dr. Gray, is with us, and I'd like for her to say a few words.
Babusha, Alafia, it's so nice to meet you.
Well, you met him before, actually.
That's what I was going to say. Asante Sana, I met you at the African Street Festival.
Ah, okay. So I don't feel
few years back.
About
a few years back. Right.
How many
right.
people that <had. laughs> Now I don't feel quite as bad.
I'm good. How are you? It's always a pleasure.
I'm thrilled to be a part of this show today, and I also want to extend greetings to our listening audience. My husband mentioned earlier the term eldership. And I just want to speak for a moment, if I may, on eldership, because in the African tradition, as you know, eldership begins at age 50. And that's wonderful because you must have a certain number of years on this earth as far as in that school of thought, to be considered an elder. I would like to cause a little rift in that, because I have met many young people who in their own right I consider elders.
Yes.
And I have learned much from many young people younger than myself. So, I respect highly our African tradition, but I just have to acknowledge many young people that I have learned much from, and they have wisdom. And, traditionally, we need to stick to tradition. Tradition and ritual are very important because they're what continue to sustain us. But I feel in certain things we can kind of bend that definition a little bit. I'm thinking, my husband knows I'm thinking of, I'm not going to call this person's name without their permission, but there's someone we know who is in their early 30s now, who we met when he was in his 20s, and he has shed light on so many topics regarding life that I consider him what they call, quote-unquote, an old soul, because he certainly had more wisdom than myself at that time in many areas, and I don't think we should overlook that. I don't want to polarize people when it comes to the subject of wisdom, because I believe that we're all learners as well as teachers.
Mm-hmm. Point well taken.
That's right.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Would you like to share some thoughts?
Oh, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm. What's your name again?
Sonya.
Okay, great. If you'd like to chime in anytime, feel free,
Well, thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. I think that just to dovetail on what you just said, the traditions of yesterday, the old traditions, some of those traditions apply, they are applicable. I know one of the areas is that we are led to believe through various spiritual orientation, as it were, that this life that we exist, that we have now, exists only one time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that once you go in transition, that's it. But there are certain African traditions that embrace the concept of reincarnation,
mm-hmm.
that the soul never dies, mm-hmm. that, you know, that we are really spiritual beings having a human experience. And I think that Biggie was somewhat in tune with that, you know, because some of his, a lot of his titles of his rap and songs alluded to death, you know. Now, not until rap came about, and maybe indeed Biggie, and perhaps Tupac.
Yeah.
We're in the same frequency, aren't we? And not until they came along did you have any songs that alluded to death. So specifically, and not until then, if they did have a song that alluded to death, the country and western music, I think, gets into that to some degree, but they did not reach the popularity where they sold platinum, you know, where it was embraced by millions of people. And I think there's something to say about that. I think there's something to say about the fact that indeed, when our ancestors were brought to this land some 400 plus years ago, that they took away from us that understanding, of that ritual understanding of the fact that when a child is born, he or she actually represents someone who possibly has deceased from the family, from the immediate family. And they are coming back in that new body form, if it were. If not the immediate family, someone within that strain, within that tree. And once you understand that, then you have nothing but to do but love that soul that was just born. You know? You cannot feel any anger, any evil energy towards it. You know, you have to embrace it as if that he or she is your own, because he or she that was just recently born could be a parent that just passed not too long ago, an uncle, a sibling, on and on. You get the point. So if you remove that reality, then there's no problem with someone seeing someone walking down the street. They maybe looks a little bit like you because of their hue, but you immediately become judgmental, and you see that it's, there's no problem in you robbing them, hurting them, or, dare I say, killing them. So I don't want to digress, but I was going to bring this around to the drum. As you know, when I started the show, and you weren't here then, but you've heard me do this before, the last show you were on, we play the drum. We beat the drum. Not any specific rhythm, because it's coming from the heart. I know that those of us in the community, going back to what my wife was talking about in terms of tradition, that you can't even touch a drum unless you go through proper ritual.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been another thing that has held us back, because people have a fear for touching something, playing something that they might be doing out of order. You know, just like we have fear of allowing elders, allowing a younger person to take the platform and to share wisdom and knowledge, because they feel, oh, you're out of order. Children should be seen and not heard, and you're not that much older than the child, and I'm older than you, and that whole game is played when people are missing out on some wisdom, because that child's voice is really a voice of an ancestor just trying to speak through it. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that out, and do you have anything to share with, about that? What I just
so
said?
Hopefully what we're doing at this round table today is promoting evolution. You know, we cannot keep doing the same thing the same way all the time and expect to progress. We cannot keep up with this separatist, this classist. You know, classism does not work, okay? And that's been proven throughout history.
Right.
And we're still doing it. I don't know if it will end in my lifetime. I certainly hope so. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, as long as there are people who are still holding on to concepts that a child is not allowed to speak, I'm an elder, okay, well, you might be an elder, but I'm older than you. And as, you know, as long as all of these types of attitudes still prevail, we're not going to come together. We'll still keep talking about why we can't come together. And I'm quite frankly, I'm tired of hearing that. We know why we can't come together. So at this point in time, evolution, change is necessary. Don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. Actually, do something about it.
Here, here. The thing that, and I'm going to lead into you, Bill, what Mel has done, and I want to talk about you in terms of what you've done as an author and as a teacher. I mean, you were Biggie Smalls' first teacher.
First teacher.
Which is really the title of the show. His first teacher.
Yeah.
So
daycare. Yeah.
This is by no accident.
Yeah.
I mean, he came into your life at a ripe age, an age where he was ready to be molded. And indeed, the ancestors don't make, the Most High doesn't make any mistakes. There's no accidents.
Yeah.
Everything's in divine order.
Yeah.
So I know that you've worked professionally as a substance abuse field counselor. You've lectured drug abusers, and you also have dedicated your life, as we know, to helping members of our community to help themselves get off drugs. You've earned numerous CASAC, was that CASAC? CASAC certificates in conventional drug rehabilitation training. You've dealt with crisis in urban America, which is a forbidden tell-all of it in terms of the state of Black America. You're telling Black America you're sick and tired of hearing being sick, right? And not too many members of our urban Black communities in this country give one excuse, far too many give one excuse after another as to why our best attempt to stay, to get well, that we wind up staying stuck. And you also explain how we allow predators in our communities, and you question the fact, are we tired of people acting like they don't see what is right under their very noses? And are you tired of the mass-scale Black denial? Are you tired of waiting for Black leaders to tell the truth? In short, crisis in urban America is a compelling dialogue that is intermingled with urban rhymes and stories of crack cocaine users reflecting the author's interpretation of the enemy we choose not to see. Would you care to just carry on with that particular thread of thought?
Sure. Not a problem. This is something I talk about all the time. But I just want to mention something real quick about Biggie, because I was talking to my son just last night that I've been trying to get him to, you know, to sit on interviews for years. I know Christopher Wallace from the time he was, well, when I met him, he was 27, right? When I say 27, right, his mind was 27, but and it was stuck in a six-year-old body.
Six was age.
Yeah, because like when I was a daycare teacher, he was six, right? But like his mind was 27, you know, with a bunch of game and all that kind of stuff. Right? Pushed his lab when he knew the truth, sold my son, right? Because he had nothing but game, you know, and he was like a kid in the candy store talking to the little kids in the class who were also six, right? But like I said, he was 27 upstairs, right? So like he was just conning them and conning them. I had to watch him and talk to him about, you know, like, stop doing that, because like, you know, you manipulate these little kids. They can't handle you, right? Anyway, but the when it comes down to the stuff that I do, the there's two things I want to touch on real quick. When you're talking about elders, right now I'm in the process of starting groups and Senior Citizen Center, because I have something called the Burning House Project. And the Burning House Project is something I started in the rehab where I was working, and I retired after 20 years working there. And it focuses on the effects on the youngest children in the community, you know, which is like the 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 year olds, right? And what we do affect them by our example. Because I'm gonna give you a quick illustration of something that anybody listening can check this out. It's called Baby and CPR Dummy. It's you know, just Google this and this thing will come up. Baby and CPR Dummy. on this little short video, it's about a minute long, you know, maybe a minute and a half. And there's this little she just happens to be a little white girl, and she's about 6 months old, and she's in a room where obviously they just had a CPR class, right? So you see the CPR dummy over the, you know, the half torso, you know, which they teach CPR on. And she's 6 months old. She can't walk and she can't talk, right? So you can't really hear this. Maybe somebody's prompting her, right? But basically, right, you know, she's 6 months old, you know, so She's not speaking, and she's not, you know, she's not, you know, if you tell her something, right, you have to, like, really play it out.
Yes.
But she's in this room where, you know, there's adults around, and obviously they just had a CPR class in there. Now, she eyes the dummy, and she scoots over to the dummy, you know, because she can't walk yet. She's 6 months old, I mean, if that, right? She pulls herself up and starts doing chest compression on the dummy.
Wow.
Right? Now, she just saw this in the past time in the classroom while they were teaching the adults, mm-hmm. which would probably include her parents. She starts doing a chest compression, and then she stops. And then she goes to the head, mm-hmm. and then she starts, you know, to blow into the mouth, and then she stops and holds the nose, right? Which is how they teach you, because if you would just take CPR, if you blow into the mouth and you're not holding the nose, right, the air comes right back out the nose.
Of course.
So, but she just, nobody told her. If you told her, mm-hmm. she'd just laugh and think that you're talking about you know, when's lunch.
Mm-hmm.
She does it exactly, and she goes back to chest compression. So my whole point about this, which I tell the people in prisons and wherever I, you know, I speak, and I direct them to, you know, to check out the video, is like the things that we forget about what you tell the kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to teach them by your example, because they're going to follow what they see you doing.
Yes.
They will follow what you see you doing. This is just one little illustration of how that works. And it works like with everybody in this room, everybody listening, everybody in the world, that's how it works.
Yes.
You know, we follow by example,
yes.
of what we see. You know,
yes.
So when I'm talking to gang members or you know, all the people that are incarcerated for, you know, for various reasons, and I'm telling them, I said, you know, well, okay, you made mistakes or whatever you did, but from this point on, you have to go. I wasn't the same. I have a guy, this guy sitting next to me, and I get to tell you that I wasn't the same when I was running the street and doing all kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when I changed, right, I said, okay, here's the example of the new me. I'm not just telling them that, right?
Yes.
He's watching me, you know, because he's supposed to watch me and see, like, well, what am I doing? Am I just talking or what? So when people, when I'm talking to the guys in prison and wherever, or whoever's doing, like, something wrong, I say if you start changing your behavior and your little kids are watching you, right, they're going to start following and watching and doing what you do.
Absolutely.
You know, so, I mean, and that's how it works. So your wife, Dora, was talking about elders. I'm getting ready to start programs. I just did a presentation again because I'm going to senior citizen centers. And in other communities, I live in Crown Heights, and in Crown Heights, the way it works in Crown Heights is like there's no one group of people in the world that are better than any other group, you know, whether it's religious, you know, or cultural, or, whatever. You know, everybody is the same, right? Mm-hmm. But we all have similar problems. But some groups handle their business better than others.
Mm-hmm.
In Crown Heights, where I live, you know, there's people of color, and then there's the Hasidic Jewish people,
mm-hmm.
who teach their children how to succeed practically from the day they're born.
Mm-hmm.
They don't teach them how to buy Air Jordan. They don't teach them anything about about true religion. They don't teach them about red bottom shoes. They don't teach them how to make rich people richer, you know, and then complain about, I have no money to pay my rent and feed my family.
Right.
Because like, you keep giving the money away. We do Robin Hood backwards.
Yes, indeed.
We steal from the poor, you know,
to
give to the people who don't need a dime.
Yes.
You know. So like in the senior centers, what I'm doing is like I'm trying to bring the seniors into the conversation, because like in other cultures around the world, even right now, because you all are well traveled, there's cultures where the seniors are still looked up to for advice.
Yes.
But in the city community, even though they're chauvinists, right, when it comes to women, they kind of leave the women out. But you go around any meeting that they have about how to improve what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
or how to correct any mistakes they made.
Yes.
Who's right in the middle of that? These guys with these long gray beards, right? The elders sit right in the middle of it.
Yes, yes.
You know, but for us, it's basically every man for himself.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to not kill that noise and start doing some stuff differently.
Absolutely. Very well said.
Thank you.
Very, very intense point made.
Yeah.
I like the piece you shared in terms of robbing from the poor and giving to the rich.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that just reverberated with me. My wife and I were looking at a program on the tube. It was a community. I won't name the community, but they wear a certain garb made by Polo.
Mm.
And I was amazed to find out that, you know, this is not too recent,
mm.
where people are being attacked and killed sometimes because they had a certain brand on.
Mm.
And that's running shoes to sweaters and coats, hats, and what have you. Then I'm driving down the street, Oh, wow. She has that on
yeah.
The child dummy.
Wow.
Wow, it's amazing. That there's a pawn shop that actually receives running shoes, basketball shoes, as legal tender.
Mm-hmm.
As long as they're not, you know, used and whatnot. That's, I mean, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's another conversation, though. We have Brother Michael, as opposed to Stephen Marbury, you know, who challenges him and say, you're going to charge $200 for a pair of run issues. I'm going to charge $25.
Yeah.
And keep it real.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to take advantage of our community. And the same thing, of course, that's just a dovetail of what happened in the drug industry.
Right.
You know, selling drugs at top dollar when it's being bought at bottom dollar, knowing that the end result, the stronger it is, has a propensity of killing someone.
Yeah.
Now, I grew up with that in my family, in my immediate family, and Harlem. But I'm not going to digress in that because this is a show about yourself as a teacher of Biggie Smalls and your son and Darnell sharing with us their experience during that era. But there's a lot to cover, and that's why I said earlier you weren't here. I was talking to Darnell that, and Bush, I think he was on at the time, that we need to do more than one show. We need to do a few shows just to touch the surface.
Yeah.
And then after that, we can become more analytical and come up with solutions, as it were, such as what you're doing at the Senior Citizen Center.
Mm-hmm.
I have some things, and I'd like to talk with you about that in terms of the drum.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that it's an interesting feeling that one gets when you know that you're on the right course.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it's reminiscent of the march, of course, in Selma. I forget the name of the bridge. But when
Edmund Pettus.
Yeah, Edmund Pettus.
Okay.
When we were locking on,
mm-hmm.
I marched, of course, Brooklyn Bridge in that celebration.
Mm-hmm.
There's a picture I can send to you of me playing the djembe drum.
Mm-hmm.
And Brother Eric Adams, who's our current borough president, was in arms with Reverend Kathy Daugherty, Reverend Herbert Daugherty's wife, and a couple other people who were New Yorkans who were involved with the Selma March. And I felt so proud to be amongst them.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt also very committed with the drum being there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing that's missing in our household. Those of you in the listening audience, again, this is Barbara Weston Gray speaking to you live from Brooklyn, New York. If you'd like to call in, please dial in that 713-955-0716. Again, that's 713-955-0716. And you just have to push the number one button, and that would indicate that you're raising your hand and that you'd like to participate in this lively discussion. And also, I'd like to share with you my website, and that's www.drumsofchange.com. That's www.drumsofchange.com. And at that site, I have a drum store, where you can purchase a drum at reasonable prices, anywhere from $29 up to a couple of $100. Some of them include shipping. I also have a bookstore that features Mel Blackman's book, would be available. And I'd like you, now that I'm touching upon it, how can they get in contact with you, and how can they access the couple of books that you've published?
Okay, well, right now, Crisis and the title of the my book, Crisis in Urban Black America, The Enemy We Choose Not to See. If you just go to Amazon and put in Crisis in Urban Black America, it'll come up. And what it is, right now it's only available on Kindle. So unless there's bulk orders that people want to order for 100 books or more, then that's a different story. But for now, it's only on Kindle. I also have the drug prevention book also on Kindle. Same deal applies, right? If people want to buy, it's a drug prevention book. It's for the parents, adults, parents, guardians, relatives, and mentors of preteens. You know, to read to the child and talk to them about, you know, how drugs set them up, the different substances, you know, set them up, and how they turn them. The name of the book is You're Not My Friend. YOURE. You're Not My Friend. You can go to YOURE.org, and you can see the information about it. And you know, these are things that we need to enlighten people, because that's what we need to do, is start, you know, keep on and enlightening people One quick note, may I make?
Yeah.
I want to make a quick note that was just mentioned the other day. And by the way, anybody listening, and I tell this to wherever I speak, and whether it's TV, radio, prisons, you know, elected officials, or anybody, I said, don't believe a word you hear me say, not one word, right? Because I can sound real good and be lying through my teeth. Anything I tell you, please check it out yourself. See, that's how things work. Because, like, you know, this thing, you know, there's no alternative facts here. This is for real. You know, this is on the up and up. So, like, when I say something, right, please check it out for yourself to find out that they're not alternative facts. You know, this is what it is. Here's a fact that I tell people. I said, because, like, money is not what people think it is. Money is a tool, right? And, like, when we keep giving people the tools to screw us up, right, you know, they keep screwing us up. So, like, you keep giving rich and they keep giving the politicians, you know, more money, more money, more money, right? They keep using that tool to screw us up. This is just FYI. Check it out. Please don't take my word for it. Check it out. So, Michael Jordan's net worth, right, and net, you know, as you know, is after taxes paid. That means this is what's in your pocket for real. This is real money. Michael Jordan's net worth is $1.31 billion. That means $1.33 billion. That's his. He can spend it any way he wants. Nike's net worth is $94 billion. And for people who don't know exactly what a billion is, it's 1,000 million. 1,000 million, not 999 million. It's 1,000 million. It's a billion. So whenever people. No. A person could have $999 million.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't get to it's not a billion until you cross over from $999,000 to the next number,
yes,
which is one
mm-hmm.
billion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not like, you know, it's fake. That's why I say it's 1,000 billion, right? I mean, 1,000 million that makes a billion. You know, anytime you go to that next number like that, then because you have a bunch of multiples before that. But the whole point is that when we keep buying. Like sneakers that cost $16, it used to be $5 years ago when I was talking about it. They cost $16 to make, and you lined up in front of Modell's and all those kind of places, you know, to buy two and three pair of $300 sneakers that cost $16, right? You need to take a look at what's going on,
mm-hmm.
you know, because like, you know, we're shooting ourselves in the foot and the head and the neck and all this kind
yeah.
of stuff.
Well, one of the things that I do give credit to, and I think it started with the hip-hop community.
Mm.
Russell Simmons. That's your brother's name that's on Shark Tank.
Oh, you're Damon.
Who? Damon.
Damon.
Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Master P.
Mm.
Not until them and other brothers and sisters, can't think of the sisters yet right now, who made inroads. I know they were. Russell Simmons' ex-wife, she had came up with a beauty line and clothes and so forth, but they were the first within our community to actually entertain becoming not just a millionaire, but billionaires.
Mm.
You know, quite a few of them now are worth over 500 million, half a billion, and they had the wherewithal to. Surround themselves with lawyers and accountants who were, for the most part, honest,
mm-hmm.
or at least as honest as they could be without being caught. But prior to that, those of us in our community who were entertainers,
mm-hmm.
actors, musicians, and so forth, we embraced, we got caught up with the drug abuse,
mm-hmm.
which is really a form of self-medication. So let's be clear about what drug abuse is.
Mm.
You know, a lot of us become users. You know, I smoked my herb. I drank alcohol excessively, you know, and became somewhat of a functional dependent.
Mm.
As it were, I was able to grow, but marginally. And if I didn't have the mercy of the Most High and the ancestors, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. Just so I know, same thing with you, Mel.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yes, we used what we had in our hand, as Adam Clayton Powell would say.
Mm.
What's in your hand, you know?
Mm.
And we coped and self-medicated to the best of our ability.
Mm.
Now, we still have that going on.
Absolutely.
We still have those of us in our community who are very successful who sell alcohol, big time, They got the name on it. They got the name on it as an endorser. They're not perhaps reaping all the benefits or the residual income from that, you know, but they're promoting it. And the nightclub scene has it and what. I don't have to name any names.
Yeah.
But I feel optimistic that that's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
I think that each generation brings a certain level of consciousness that changes, you know, things. I don't have anything against, my wife and I both are vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that being vegetarian is something that many people can't be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. many of us have to have our fish, our chicken, mm-hmm. Whatever meat we're going to eat. Yeah. Many of us have to have a cigarette. Many of us have to have a shot,
mm-hmm.
you know, a wine or cognac or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all have whatever it is that it allows us to be within our comfort zone. But for the most part, we know that we have to eat certain foods, you know, the vegetables, the fruits. We have to drink a certain amount of water. We have to, you know, hydrate ourselves. We have to cleanse ourselves, get rid of the toxins
mm-hmm.
and so forth. And then we have to start being able to think good thoughts, which is what going to church does,
mm-hmm.
which is what prayer does, which is what meditation does, which is what pouring libation does,
mm-hmm.
playing the drum. That allows you to focus on something larger than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and once you open yourself up to that, then that energy is able to come in and take out the bad and leave in the good. You know, I don't want to start preaching right now, but, you know, I just feel that indeed
need to be heard.
That's what has to be heard within our churches, within our mosques, within our temples. You know, whenever we get together in a group, we have to have that positive peer pressure amongst us.
Yes.
We look each other in the face, in the eyes, and we can see there's something wrong. Right, we don't have to out them out in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Come here, I want to have a talk with you, man.
Yeah.
Let's go in the backyard for a minute. Let's talk for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, I see something. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because
I love you. You know, I'm not just here to use you or to make myself look better than you. I love you. So if I love you, that means that I'm going to treat you like I would treat myself. Hopefully I'm not a masochist and I treat myself wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
You know? So I think that's a conversation that we need to have amongst us in the African tradition. When a brother meets another brother walking down a road, he might have an appointment to make that's about he's about to trade off selling his sheep or some produce or gold or whatever he has in his sachet. And they will stop, put everything down on the ground and say, well, how's your family?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how's your mother? How's your father?
Mm-hmm.
How's your wife? How's your children? How are your siblings doing? They don't look at no watch because they know that I might not see you for another year.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason why the ancestors of the Most High brought us together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to stop that. And that means that if you're a Christian, that you're no better than if you're Pentecostal, Baptist, you know, Protestant, whatever. You know better than I am if you practice Yoruba or Ifa, if you practice the principles of my art, if you're from the hood and you pour libation from a liquor bottle, that doesn't make me any better than you if I pour libation in the tree from water. You know, because I'm bearing witness to something that's greater than I. So anyway, I just wanted to share that thought.
And like you said, I think that's what needs to be heard now. Like far as like I tell you, go back to my father and Bush. Like I say, you know, I had my run-ins with the streets and things like that. But it was always, you know, people that I seen and I heard that talk. Like especially my father, he's a drill sergeant, but you know. I love him, you know what I'm saying? It's like he always, like, you know,
that's where you gotta be.
he never really forced me. He just, like he said, take my word for me. Listen, like, don't believe that I'm saying. Go do the research yourself. That's like basically like that.
Yeah.
So he'd tell me, and I'd be like, I say I'm going on like 4 years now without drinking, smoking, marijuana, nothing like that.
Wonderful.
And like I said, the Most High is beautiful because after that, everything changed for me. Like I said, the job and vehicle and you know things that people doing in the street, I'm able to do that by doing the right thing. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and then I, you know, like I say, you know, we need to like really preach these words. Like I say, because God is beautiful. God is strong, and I'm getting goosebumps even talking about it. But like,
Amen.
You know, he's so strong. It's like, you know, we need to spread the word so people would hear that. So they need to hear it. And whether they take heed to it at that moment, the fact that you gave them that, they were like, you know what, whatever jam they get into, I know I done been in jams with my father. Like, gee, I told you don't do that. You go over there, it's what happened. Then I've been not locked up for marijuana possession or something like that. And I'm going to say, like, damn, my pop just told me.
He's shot.
This is what's going on right now. You know what I'm saying? So it's like.
Shot.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And things like that. So it was like we were just saying, I think we need to really just really preach these things to people and let them hear that, because that's what needs to be heard. But I mean, and act on it. You know what I'm saying? For always, you know, being consistent with, you know, with how we believe. Because I just, like I said, you just asked me a minute ago. And I tell my father, he's like, what's my occupation? I told you I was in a French restaurant. And I was doing, you know, deal with the pastries and stuff. And I was downstairs in the kitchen with the workers. And this guy, I'd always, like I said, you know, I like to spread the word, you know, my joy, what God done for me, you know what I'm saying? So this guy was the truck driver. Like, he's asking, that's why I got a position there. And I'd always tell him, Mike, you know, you can put his name out there, but it's a lot of mics. But, this dude, man, and I'd always tell him, like, you know, he was in a program one time, and like I said, he must have been in a situation a couple of years back, and like 2 years back, 3 years back, and he was in a program, and I guess it was either jail or the program. He did the program.
Mm-hmm.
Successfully completed it, but like I said, you gonna always do right when you got you on paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same thing I said myself. You can't lie to nobody but yourself. You
Absolutely.
Know what I'm saying? So my thing was like, you know, you complete the program, you got a job. The guy that was in the program with you helped you get the job where you at now, and you were downstairs in the kitchen with me. You went to a truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's old paper.
Mm-hmm.
Now you back to doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get paper, that's when the job. That's when the real big test. When life really begins.
Absolutely.
When you got a bunch of, you know, people telling you, oh, you know, you got to have it. You get your dirty urine and you going to jail, and of course you're gonna do right. You know, once you get off that paper, you got to stay on the same path. So, long story short, I would tell him like, he come to work, and I like, what's going on with you, man? You know, you can't, you smell your liquor, or you know, you smell weed or whatever case. And I'm telling you, listen, man, you know, God is beautiful. See what He did for you, man.
Mm-hmm.
He helped you. Say you came here arguing about your apartment, leaving your apartment and all that. When you first got here using the program, he gave you that back.
Mm-hmm.
Basically gave that back with an income to have a little bit of gold for yourself at the end of the month or whatever. He's drinking. This guy, two or three weeks ago, just gave him the priest him that following week. He's about to go on vacation the week after or whatever, the week coming up. And I'm like, yo, man, you got to chill. Whatever you're doing, man, relax, man. You know, see what God is doing. You got your daughter working with you. You got a granddaughter, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the week before his vacation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every morning I see him. He come to get the boxes and stuff, and I give it to him, and he go about his business. He didn't come. So I'm like, look at the time, and I'm like, man, it's late. They're like, Donnell, call him, you know. I called him and go straight to voicemail. In the street, you know, you call somebody, you know, dealing people in the street, you call somebody and they go straight to voicemail 9 out of 10 times, something right. You call three or four times, so my name is, and they go straight to voicemail, something right. So I'm like, something right. He got locked up. So he got locked up.
Mm-hmm.
But say, the story was that he was moving his car from one side of the street to the other side of the street, and he fell asleep with the car drive. Police woke him up with the car on the sidewalk.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Wow. So it's the name that he had to go through the whole process of jail and call them to try to save his job. But it's like, I still talk to him. Like, D, you're right, man. Thanks for being a friend, man. But I'm like, God is the most high. I mean, he gave you something, man. You got to cherish it.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Stop playing with it. I'm pretty sure. And he older than me, so I'm like, just stop playing with the Most High, man. You can't.
This life is a gift.
It's a gift.
Each day is a gift.
Matter of fact,
each hour, each minute is a gift.
Exactly.
We don't know when we'll take our last breath.
Enjoy it.
That's what's for the president.
Yeah.
That's why they call it the present.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's hard and beautiful for me. So
Bush, do you have something to share?
Yep, man, listen. Yeah, I feel like I'm on Gates Avenue. So when you know, when y'all see me and y'all tend to see me just standing on a corner sometimes, I'm just getting those vibrations that I don't necessarily get where I'm at right now. So sometimes just you know, folks come and they say, "Man, you just standing here because that energy." And I'm just saying thank you again, because like I feel like I'm right there in this, I'm right there in the room with all of y'all, and it's a blessing just to hear, you know, Donnell speaking the way he's speaking and talking about you know, about the Most High and things that he's doing on a positive level. And I'm just, man, I'm like I'm feeling grateful for being allowed in this circle and hearing the discussion that I'm hearing, you know, especially with us building on an intellectual level, you know. And I think going back to what Mama Gray was saying in terms of us doing the same thing over and over, what's happening with us in our community, I think we really need to go back to what we were doing, or well, the elders were doing in the early 70s, late 60s, that we tend to, we got away from that collective, you know. And I think that is really important, not just there in Brooklyn, but all through the inner cities where we tend to be, that we have to get back to that whole, you know, collective thinking process, and also developing our independent institutions again, and stop relying on other folks. Like Brother Mel talked about the sneakers and stuff like that, how we tend to pay and put out money for other folks to get rich, as opposed to ciphering up the money inside our community. I kind of see where we lost our business concept. You know, I was there, you know, around the neighborhood, and I think, now, you remember Beasley Candy Store, all those things that, you know, those stores that we own, that we no longer own, you know. We lost that concept. The what was that, the Steak and Take, Shabazz's Steak and Take.
Shabazz,
But that was it, because I remember it being on Franklin and Fulton. I remember, you know, so we have to get back to, you know, that type of blueprint. And one of the things that – this is one of the things that I kind of pinpointed is that we got to – the same way you taught Donnell, we have to also teach our kids the same way. We have to – you know, one of my faults was I was so busy doing other – you know, like building with so many other kids that even the rites of passage, you know, those type of programs, my oldest didn't go through that. I thought it would just trickle down, you know, like you hanging with me, you know. No, we have to teach our kids, you know. We have to train them, and you know, and in terms of what Mama Gray saying, that is that classism, it don't work. I'm telling y'all, we came down here, me and my family, we went to the suburbs. We found out those neighbors that we thought were our neighbors are not really our neighbors. You know, so
yeah,
I'm getting back to Confederate flags and all that nonsense. Yeah, wow. You know, us coming from, you know, the North, we're not used to that. So we had to went and grabbed something else back in our community, and I feel comfortable. You know, I'm telling you, I feel
comfortable. What I like to do, Mabusha, what I like to do, and I'm sorry for cutting you off, but we're just about out of time. But what I'd like to do is to continue what this thought that you just presented, and extend that thought around in the roundtable fashion, and also touch upon the fact that you are a real estate businessman in your town, and for you to share with us what you're doing in that respect. And then I want to just mention also that Congressman Hakeem Jeffries recited Juicy one of the most positive, I think it was about three or four songs that Biggie created and that he's famous for, but he recited that at, on the floor of Congress. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's an indication of a certain acknowledgement that's being made on a governmental level nationwide in terms of whatever we've done negatively, that there's something positive that's come out of our contribution as educators, teachers, artists, and those of us who are businessmen and women. So I want to thank you so much for being on the show, Brother Mabusha, and
yes,
I look forward
thank
to
you.
Us continuing this. And I want to thank you, Brother Darnell,
thank you, sir.
For being
thank
on the show and
you.
Spending your Sunday afternoon with
oh,
us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank
and,
you.
And I want to thank you, Brother Mel.
Thank you.
And Sister Sandra.
Sonia.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. For coming and participating mm-hmm. and sharing your energy. Mm-hmm. And my lovely wife, Dr. Dora Gray. Mama Gray. Oh, I want to thank you so much.
Yeah, Mama Gray.
yes, indeed. I'm so happy that we were able to have the show this afternoon mm-hmm. and to share our thoughts. Mm-hmm. And as always, we will end by giving praise and homage to the Most High and to our ancestors, to the guardians, to the angels, to the deities. By playing the drum. And again, thank you, the listening audience. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. And of course, those of you who are tuning in can share the word. And we have an archive of about 193 shows that you can archive. And of course, we have Brother Mel Blackman. He was on our show a few months ago. And of course, he has something of interest to share with what he has been doing along with what he shared this afternoon. So peace, love, everybody. God bless. Alafia, Mode Pu. Peace and blessings.
Peace.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.